Would you read with me? Follow along with me. I'm going to read from Habakkuk chapter 1, beginning in verse number 1, and I'm going to read the first 4 verses. The oracle that the prophet Habakkuk saw. O Lord, how long shall I cry for help, and you will not listen? Or cry to you, violence, and you will not save? Why do you make me see wrongdoing and look at trouble? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. So the law becomes slack, and justice never prevails. The wicked surround the righteous. Therefore, judgment comes forth perverted. Would you pray with me? Lord God, too many instances in our world today leave us asking, how long? Would you give us eyes to see and ears to hear that the answer is the once-for-all gift of the God in Jesus Christ, the hope of our rectification? So with the songwriter, may we say and plead that the words of our mouths and the meditation of all of our hearts will be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our Redeemer, and all God's people say. In 1974, the musical band Ace, that will test my brother's knowledge of old rock and roll music. Ace and Paul Carrick released their debut album, 5 A-Side. Now, if you're old enough, you remember that those albums used to have an A-side and a B-side. And generally, the A-side got played, the B-side barely got played. And sometimes the best songs were on the B-side. But the name of their album, their first debut album of this English band, was 5 A-Side. And the song, one song on that album, reached number 3 on U.S. and Canadian charts. The name of the song? How Long. And maybe you've heard that song. Maybe you haven't, but maybe you have, and you'll know that the refrain, the repetitive line is, how long has this been going on? Something has happened, and the lyricist wants to know, how long has this been going on? Those who heard that song, who listened to that song over and again, immediately thought that Paul Carrick, the one who wrote the words, was describing a time of infidelity, marital infidelity, wanting to know how long has this cheating been going on. But in order to settle it all, Carrick wasn't talking about that at all. Now, he was talking about a sense of infidelity, but he wasn't talking about that particular form of infidelity. No, he had discovered that his bassist had been playing with other bands, the Sutherland Brothers and Quiver. I mean, if you didn't know that part when you heard the lines and you said you was never intending to break up our scene this way, but there ain't any use in pretending, it could happen to us any day. Certainly, you could have heard those lyrics and thought, well, he must be talking about a girlfriend or more. But no, he was talking about a friend who had cheated playing the bass with another band or two. And he wanted to know, how long has this been going on? How long have I not known what's happening here? I thought of that when I began reading over and again Habakkuk. 3 chapters. You could read it every day for the next 3 weeks. It might take you 15 minutes. I suggest you try it. It's the last of our series, The Lion Roared. It is 3 weeks of something different. And if you've never read the Habakkuk, you can get a check mark for having read at least one book of the Bible. every day for a month, if you want. But when I read those words in verse 2, how long, I couldn't help but think of that song that started playing over and over in my head. How long has this been going on? How long? And when you read Habakkuk, like I hope you will, when you read Habakkuk, you get this distinct feeling that Habakkuk is asking a question that at a deeper level seems to be presenting us with another issue. How long has this been going on, or how long will this go on, really then boils down to this underlying question is, who is being unfaithful? Who is being unfaithful? I mean, we're following up Amos with these 3 weeks of Habakkuk, and where Amos was not a prophet by profession. Remember, he was a cattle herder. He raised sheep and other animals, and that was his job. And then suddenly one day God whisked him from Judah and compelled him to go north to Israel. He goes to Bethel and he begins to give his pronouncements. That is, the pronouncements God had given him to give. Most believe that Habakkuk was a professional prophet. He wasn't just swept away from another vocation, but he was. That was his job. I mean, 40 years after Amos left Judah to give God's warning to Israel, the northern kingdom fell. I mean, so if we are kind of keeping track of, do we learn the lessons of history, it went something like this. Amos leaves the southern kingdom, which is referred to as Judah. He goes to the northern kingdom, which is referred to as Israel. He gives this pronouncement, his words of doom and his visions of destruction. He gives them to Israel. He gives us those last few verses that hold for them a promise that it's not the ultimate end, but it will be an end for some and something. 40 years later, Northern Kingdom is taken over by foreign invaders. What had been announced, came to pass. So one would think that if Judah was paying attention, they would have seen what happened up north and they would have mended their ways. But here we are, 160 years after Amos. And all Judah has done is perfect the resistance and rebellion of the northern kingdom. Instead of the pursuing years saying, man, we don't want to end up like that. After all, that cattle herding prophet came and told them that was going to happen to them, and it did. Maybe we should mend our ways. Maybe we should pick up and do something different than they did. And instead Judah actually had participated in the rot, and they became perfecters of it. And it seems as though they had a short-term memory problem. And their memory problem was this. They had just heard 40 years, now it would be approximately 160 years, but they had the words of the prophet, because most believe Amos was written down. And so at this particular point, they had forgotten that Amos said this, for 3 transgressions of Judah and for 4, I will not revoke the punishment, because they have rejected the law of the Lord and have not kept his statutes, but they have been led astray by the same lies after which their ancestors walked. In other words, Judah was as complicit with Israel at the same time for rejecting what God had determined he wanted for his people. So they heard a warning. Now, it wasn't as long in Amos's text. Judah's warning wasn't as long. But the consequences was going to be the same. Fire is going to come. We should together think that surely Judah is going to pay attention. They will have seen what happened, and they will do different. But they didn't. In fact, there's three couplets, the three kind of, in the poetic way Habakkuk gives it to us, there are three kind of couplet descriptions of the circumstances that he is facing. So he uses words like, I've seen wrongdoing and trouble, destruction and violence, strife and contention. It's hardly what you would expect had they learned the lesson of their brothers and sisters up north. Had they taken stock of the words of the prophet ringing true and becoming real, one would think that these would not be the kind of words to describe the circumstances in Judah. Wrongdoing and trouble, destruction and violence, strife and contention. So no wonder that the opening line of the burden, that's the word oracle, it really means burden, this burden that Habakkuk feels, he knows the history, he knows the prophetic guild, he knows what's coming, he knows that there are consequences wired into our decisions, he knows all this, so he takes a different tact. Where Amos leaves Judah to go to Israel, Habakkuk is right there squarely in Judah, and instead of saying anything to Judah, he says, I'm taking my case to God. Where in Amos, all the surrounding nations of Israel, including Judah and Israel, were in the dock for all that they had done, Habakkuk puts God in the dock. How long shall I cry for help and you not listen? Now, I don't know at what point you might feel a holy boldness, but most of us read that and go, whoa, are you sure? Because we have these images of the mighty smiter, that if we dare express the circumstances surrounding us and the angst we feel and the burden we carry, that we say, hey, what's going on here? We're afraid that some... Well, Dr. Carpenter, Brother Carpenter rather, not doctor, but Brother Carpenter would say, God's going to bounce a rifle ball off your punkin' head. And that's kind of the imagery that we get. If I dare say, how long are you going to let this go on, God? We're afraid that he's going to say something like, are you talking to me that way? You talking to me like that? So we hear this and we go immediately, wait a minute. Habakkuk, he's got a little more moxie than the rest of us. But if we took our scriptures and we did a little survey, at least in my particular translation, this phrase, how long, shows up 58 times in the Bible. 58 times, how long. And sometimes how long is God addressing the people? How long will you refuse me? Sometimes God's saying that to people. For example, Moses carries the message to Pharaoh. And in Exodus we find, how long will you refuse to humble yourself before me? Sometimes how long is God saying to human beings or to people, like, how long are you going to kind of continue in this way? Other times, that how long is used in conversations between people, between human beings. So when Moses had confronted Pharaoh and the plagues are falling one by one, at one point Pharaoh's advisors come to Pharaoh and say, how long shall this fellow be a snare to us? Let God's people go. Let the people go. And then surprisingly, there are more than one instance where how long is something people say to God. Most often in the Psalms. How long, O Lord, will you look on? Rescue me from the ravages, my life from the lions, we find in Psalm 35. How long? It seems that Habakkuk is in good company. He probably grew up and was schooled in the songs of God's people. And he may have in mind, I'm borrowing that prayer, making it my prayer, and I'm saying to God, how long? how long can this continue? How long must I cry for help? And when we hear this phrase, how long, in the Bible, we are reading a complaint, a lament. I lament that things are this way. I wish they were different. And you're the one who knows how to fix it. So not only am I lamenting the condition that's in Judah, but I'm complaining that you're letting it go on. Now, how does that sit? That is what we're looking at. And so we probably should receive Habakkuk's little book, one of what's called the 12, included in, I think, the minor prophets. We ought to hear Habakkuk's "How long must I cry?" as a reasonable prayer. Not a surprise, not startling, but as reasonable. For you and I can look around and we often wonder, how long can this go on this way? Whether you are an Israeli or you are a Palestinian, the question since October 7th is, how long can we go on this way? Every time there is a shooting in a public school because we refuse to address all of the accompanying issues, we ask, how long is this going to go on? And when we are ensnared left and right by lies of the right and the left, we find out the truth eventually comes out, and we say to ourselves, how long is this going to continue to go on? How long is a reasonable prayer? How long, asking how long to those who don't have any ability to fix how long it is, actually is an exercise in futility, yes? So when we think that the solutions are in Washington or on North Lincoln or at City Hall, we are asking those who have no control at keeping these things from going on, or at least they haven't shown any proof that they can take care of these issues. The rightful place to go is, God, how long? And if you're afraid to say how long, then let me just suggest being a bit more honest in your prayers. Because you do. You know the experiences of your own lives, our own lives. And there have been moments, there have been circumstances, there have been situations, there have been conditions, there have been things that we go through, and we want to know, how long till this is over? God, are you paying attention? And we are afraid to say that. So now, if Habakkuk has done anything for you today, it is now you have permission. Permission granted. Ask the one who makes a promise, how long until the promise comes to pass. So before you think that I'm mad at God, I'm not. And when you ask how long, you're not. What you're asking, though, is the one who made the promise. When can we expect that promise to become real? It does seem a bit audacious that Habakkuk asks such a question. As already, hopefully, you've picked up, there are two ways to get this. God, how long are these people going to do these things? And what would your answer be? Well, I mean, if we take the narrative of the Old Testament, we take the narrative of our own lives, we're probably going to answer, this is just going to keep going on. So if we're asking the question, how long are these people, or even we people, going to persist in doing things this way, the obvious answer seems to be, ain't nobody stopping us now. That's another song. So then the question, looking for the reasonable prayer looking for a reasonable answer is to say, okay, God, time's up. Time's up. This is gone too far. You're now the one to whom I'm complaining and questioning. It leaves us with a bit of an uneasiness. I mean, it's one thing to bow the head and bend the knee and say, God, how long is this going to go on? It's quite another to say, okay, God, time's up. Quite another, right? But Habakkuk really is going to be persistent in chapter 1. So if you read it, I'm going to give you a quick overview of what happens, and then we'll come back, okay? Quickly, what happens is you get these first four verses. You get this open introductory prayer, and as though God and Habakkuk are having a conversation, God says to Habakkuk, hey, I got news for you. There's some things going on in the world that you don't know a whole lot about, so let me just clue you in that if you knew what was coming, you would be amazed and astounded. Because I've got this group of people just outside the territory here, and they are going to come through here, and they are going to do some business and take care of all the problems that are in here. Now, I just have to say, if you're asking how long, and you say, God, it's time, this has got to end, you don't expect God to say, oh, it's going to get worse, and the people who are causing problems are going to be another group of people. How's that for an answered prayer? But that's precisely what happens. God says, beginning there in verse number 5, look at the nations and see, be astonished, be astounded, for work is being done in your days that you will not believe if you were told. You wouldn't believe it, Habakkuk, if I told you what's fixing to happen. I'm going to take the Chaldeans, they're going to march an army, and they're going to sweep through here like locusts. They are really going to take care, and things are going to be turned completely upside down. That is not the kind of promise Habakkuk was hoping to hear fulfilled. Right? I mean, tell me you want to pray and ask God how long, and you are going to be really excited when God says, oh, it's going to get worse. Right? So, Habakkuk is undeterred. Why, God? You're not too old. You can handle this. You can do this. So are you telling me that you've made people like the fish of the sea, like crawling things that have no one to rule over them? In other words, God, is this just going to remain out of control? So you tell me you've got a plan, but I'm telling you, and all by all appearances, I know you can do something. You've told me you're at work. But if you're telling me that this is what's coming, I'm still going to ask, how long? By the time you get to the end of verse 4, the thing that is really concerning Habakkuk is that the powerful religious, the powerful social, the powerful civic people in Judah have learned how to flaunt the law, take advantage of the law, so that when the time comes to execute the law, it really isn't executed, it's slack. And the slack has been let out of the law such that justice is now perverted. His language. You can't call it justice. And the thing that Habakkuk is longing for is justice. Now, you and I, we tend to hear that, and we substitute the word justice with judgment. Because after all, we really need God to judge those people. Which is precisely why Israel and Judah kind of were okay when Amos got started. Yes, you're right, God, those people and those people and those people and those people. And then when God, you know, zoomed in on Judah and Israel, it's like, oh, wait a minute, that's a little bit too close. That's a little bit narrow. But Habakkuk was like, listen, The people are still being mistreated. People who are disadvantaged, these folks are taking advantage. Now, can I just give a footnote here? Before your mind runs to this political group or that political group, could we just all for once agree all of them do that? There isn't one that doesn't work to take advantage of the laws, slack it out so that someone can get by, and justice is perverted. Habakkuk wants the wrong to be set right. That's what he wants. Habakkuk wants the wrong to be rectified. Not simply judged, but wants it to be turned over and made right. Judgment is not always the same as justice. The way maybe to make that point is to say that Israel has a narrative history where from beginning, if the Hebrew Scriptures are the history of Israel, from the beginning, people have been resisting and rejecting and rebelling against the better design for them, always choosing against their own best self-interests. God's laid it out what it would look like if we kind of were faithful to the design that He'd given us, but from the get-go, we've been choosing against our own best interest, the interest God has for us. And as a result, as this narrative works out, we could take a segment of that history and we could take Moses, for instance, and the people of God in the wilderness. And on more than one occasion, God is so fed up with Israel that God declares to Moses, "I am fixing to wipe the planet of these people and I'm starting over with you." And if we read the stories and the resistance and the rebellion and the choosing against our own self-interest, you know, we probably would be as exasperated and say, "Go your own way. I'm done. I'm out. Starting over." And each time Moses says, "Hey, wait a second. I don't know that that's like in the plan. I think let's rethink this thing. These are your people." Habakkuk wants these people to be set right, even if they are his fellow Judahites. When that happens, I don't know how to... We tiptoe around that and we call it God relenting because we're afraid to say God changed his mind. But something happened in that moment. God was determined to do a thing and he didn't. And maybe what it's telling us about God is that God is more patient than we want him to be. God is more patient than we want him to be. And that may be Habakkuk's dilemma. God, this has been going on in our history a long, long time. I really think that it's time. Won't you do something about this? And it seems where we're heading is God reveals himself to be more patient than we want God to be. Now, we want God to be patient with us. No question about that. No question. But we sure would prefer God to be a little bit less patient with them. And this may be where it is. So we still have this issue. We still have this problem of the story of God in Scriptures where, as Jeff read, here are God's laws and statutes and decrees and really this synonymous poetic way of saying God's laid it out how the world will be great if you just kind of are faithful to these things. And even though it's on repeat and even though it's a song they sung over and again, they just didn't live it or follow it. And so prophets like Habakkuk and Amos and Isaiah and Jeremiah and all of them are coming along to say, God, it's time. So when Paul, the apostle, begins making his argument about the rectification of God in his letter to the Christians at Rome, he uses this puzzling line. God looked over, overlooked some of these past transgressions. It's Paul's way of saying, the Apostle Paul's way of saying, God was forbearing, he was patient, that the Hebrew word, he was long-suffering. He was more patient than anyone wanted God to be. And in order to rectify both all things and God's own reputation, God died for us. It's an aspect of what goes on the cross that we don't often talk about, but what happens in the crucifixion is certainly Jesus suffers the deserts of our rebellion and our resistance. But it is also a statement that God is saying, I am going to take care of the promise I made, and I'm going to take the consequence of your sins into myself. In other words, the cross is God's justification of God. I have the right to be patient because I am going to be the one to rectify you. I then am the one that gets to say when that will happen. And I'm going to show you an insufferable patience, because the songwriter said, God's mercies are renewed every morning. We talk about the cross being the place at which God justifies the ungodly, but Paul also said that in that cross, God became the just and the justifier of the ungodly. In other words, it's to say, God is saying, okay, here's how I'm keeping my promise. Habakkuk, Amos, Isaiah, Jeremiah, all of those who were looking and saying, God, surely your patience has run out. God keeps saying, I'm bearing with you. Peter knew how to put it. That is the Apostle Peter in that passage in his little letter to this diaspora Jews of his day, those who had been scattered across the Roman Empire, when they were concerned about God not doing what they thought God ought to do, God was being too patient. You remember what Peter said? See, don't take God's patience as the fact that God's no longer paying attention. But God's patience is so that all might be saved. That's what Peter says. Don't reckon God's delay as God's disinterest. God's not willing that any should perish, Peter writes, but that all should come to repentance. Patience is God's grace. Act it out every day. So what Habakkuk was pointing to was the way God was going to bring mishpat, or justice, rectify the world. We look back and go, in Jesus, God inaugurated the rectification of all things. And one day that justice will be complete. That justice will be complete when resurrection takes place. Because here's how to mark the difference between our vision of justice and what's going on in the Scriptures. For us, a condemned person receives justice when they are serving time or giving their life. Justice in the Scriptures is God giving back what was taken. Judgment is the penalty prescribed by those who say, if you break this law, this is what's going to happen. Justice says, I'm going to bring that one back from the dead. The justice of God is shown in the resurrection of Jesus. Had Jesus remained in the tomb, it's done. That's why Paul made such the argument in his Corinthian letter. Because Jesus was raised from the dead, because God gave Jesus back to us, we can be assured that everything broken by the powers of sin and death, everything damaged by the powers of sin and death, everything wrong caused by the powers of sin and death are going to be rectified, made right. That's justice. That's why we can stand at a graveside yesterday and say, there will be resurrection. Because everyone you know who has died in the Lord, you can say, God's going to give them back to me. And more importantly, God's getting them back for Himself. God's getting them back for Himself. How long? I don't know how long Tex was playing bass for somebody else. Have no idea. But I do know that in Jesus, God said, okay, here we are. I'm showing you the promise. Here's what's done for you. Now, enjoy my patience and your forgiveness, bearing witness to all others that my mercies are new every day. Now, what that does for us, it turns it around and say, the question then becomes back to Habakkuk, how long will you fail to recognize I'm always at work, everywhere, and at all times to rectify all things? That becomes the question. Would you pray with me?